What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/new book and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Happy birthday, Russ. Thank you, Joey. What a great card you gave me the other day. The one with the squirrel, with the nuts. What were you trying to say about me? That I'm a little kooky? Like I lose my nuts from some time, or the nut doesn't fall too far from the tree? What were you trying to get
at? Sound close enough. Yeah, I think we'll just leave that up to everybody's imagination.
Bite my tongue on that one.
You're holding your tongue on that one, Ernie?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of my birthday, it's interesting. The other day when we had Paul Cleveland on our show, we were talking about how the government had stolen so much money from us. And we talked about how an ounce of silver was worth $16, right? And it was something that now a dollar bill is worth one, like 16th, I guess, of what it used to be worth. So really the math on that was that 95% of the dollar has been stolen since we went off that silver standard. Well, my nephews got me for my birthday a silver certificate.
That is so cool.
Do you know what a silver certificate is, Ernie?
Can't say I do.
It's a dollar bill. It's a $1 bill. They gave me a $1 present, which I felt like that was pretty
nice of them.
Yeah, that was pretty crafty on their part. But actually, on the top of it, it shows silver certificate. So it used to be you could take that dollar bill to the bank and turn it in for an ounce of silver. Now you take that dollar bill, they give you 4 quarters. Not the same sort of silver you're looking for, right?
That's exactly right. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, right? We're actually talking about a little bit about the theft of money and what my experience was with my IRA.
Well, you had a gift, right? That gift was a 401k that you then turned into an IRA that had some other benefits. It's the gift that keeps on giving, as Eddie from Christmas Vacation would say.
Well, I just felt like it was helpful for us to share this story because it's not a week that goes by that someone doesn't ask me, well, what about qualified plans? Okay, so we're going to talk specifically about my IRA today, but this really applies to anything that's a qualified plan. What do I mean by that? Talking about 401ks?
Yeah, well, you need SEP, 403Bs, SEP IRAs, Roth IRAs, any of these things, which is the norm for people to have, right? I mean, this is like, why don't you have an IRA? If you don't have an IRA, then you're not in the cool crowd. You're not a member. You know, like yesterday you were wearing that jacket. I thought it was a members only.
Oh, see, you have to bust me on my jacket.
Wasn't it a good thing to be qualified?
Well, see? Qualified for what? Compared to what, Ernie?
To be not qualified? my cash account's not qualified.
It sounds like a good thing, right?
I mean, I will give the government credit and Wall Street credit for their marketing potential, because what do they call a stock or any sort of investment? What is the term, the technical term they use for it?
Security.
A security, right? Mm. I mean, man, who doesn't want to feel secure? Isn't that a qualified plan? It's qualified. Hey, it's tax deferred. Don't you want to defer taxes? Sure, I will. The names of these things, pretty interesting marketing. But yeah, whenever it comes down to my money's locked up in prison until 59 and a half without parole, and I don't know how much of it I'm going to get back, I'm the one that's going to take all the risk. And they're going to be the one who gets to decide how much of it they keep. It starts sounding a little worse when you put it that way.
Well, and that's exactly what I was, you know, experiencing. This was what, 8 years ago, something like this. I started to learn about what was really going on in this place where I was, quote unquote, saving money. And I'm doing the air quotes for those of you who can't see.
For those of you, like, is there anybody who can see? If you can see, let me know, because I'm already weirded out.
So, yeah, I'm learning about these things. And I'm realizing, well, why in the world do I keep putting money in my 401k, which, again, eventually lend itself to being an IRA when I left the company I was with. But it was all these limits, right? There's limits on how much I can put into it each year. There's limits on...
Well, don't you want to have a limit of how much money you can put into something, Joey?
If it's good for me, why would I want a limit?
If it's good for you, you shouldn't do it that way. I mean, now I will say, I mean, food, I love eating. I should put limits on how much of that birthday cake I ate last week and had another piece today, by the way.
Yes, he did.
We saw that.
Yeah. There should be limits to those kind of things. There should be limits to how much alcohol I would consume, or limits to how much episodes of The Office I watch in a given week. All of these things I have, you know, gone over from time to time. But when it comes to saving money, why should I have limits on it?
Yeah, it just seems like totally counterintuitive, right? I was starting to feel those things, the restrictions that were put on it. How can I get my hands on this money? I know you remember this, me talking to you like, wait a minute, I've got this money, but I can't touch it. How can I get access to it?
Well, when we started talking about this, I told you, hey, look, I used to have a 401k. My wife had an IRA at the job that she was at, and we cashed those in. And I remember you looking at me like, what?
Yeah, that was
you did that?
Mind-boggling. And probably the people that are listening, like, what in the world are these guys talking about? But, you know, really what it came down to, there's a couple key things. And I just want to share this just from my personal experience. I started wondering, okay, what is the tax rate going to be on this money? I mean, that makes all the difference in the world. Because if it's $2 million, but 60% of it is taken up in taxes, how am I going to know? No one's going to know that at this stage. So why am I leaving that up to chance? That was a big hindrance for me as to why I would keep money in that. At the time, I was in my young 30s, right?
Well, and to stop your story just a hair, I want to make sure you point out the fact that when we're talking about limits, those limits come not only with limits how much money we can put into something, but also limits to what we can do with it. Just last week, and I'm still dealing with it this week, one of our close clients is trying to take money that she has in an IRA and invest in a unique investment. It's an investment that actually I'm personally invested in, and you are too, Joey.
That's right.
It's what we believe is going to be a great opportunity, and she wants to participate in the same thing. But it's new, it's different, and she's having to convince the IRA company that I want to do this. And they're questioning her on her ability to use this money. And it's just that going back to restrictions, when we really don't have full control. I give this example. Ernie, have you ever driven a go-kart?
Of course I have.
Have you ever driven one that didn't have a governor so it lets you go as fast as you wanted to?
No.
How frustrating is it to drive a go-kart that you can only go so fast?
Well, the thing, last time I was there was actually this winter. We were driving these go-karts and every lap they'd speed it up. These people were dictating how fast we could go.
Well, that's kind of a great example of what the government's doing with our restrictions to how much money we can put in these things and how much we can actually use it. I get so frustrated when I'm on a golf course and I'm trying to catch up to the guy in front of me and I'm just like, just pedal down. And it's like, you know, there's no catching up.
For me, the frustrating thing is when you're going down a hill on a go-kart.
Oh, and it's like,
oh, that's when it kicks in.
They hit the brakes on you. And it's
Well, isn't that what it feels like though? Whenever you have people who are telling you, hey, I'm trying to use this money. I want to go do things with it. I want to put it to work, but yet there's limits. There's restrictions. And you were feeling that exact same thing when you and I were having that conversation.
Yeah. And again, just to talk a little bit about the taxation piece, because I really think this is one of those quiet killers, you know, that people just don't even have a clue what's happening. I started learning and looking at the debt limit, right? And the debt limit keeps going up and up and up. And, you know, David Walker wrote in a book, I don't even remember the book, was The Power of Zero.
Power Zero,
and
yep.
He specifically said taxes must double in the future for one four-letter word. And I think we've mentioned it before, but it was math. He said, simply put, we cannot continue at the rate that we're doing and not increase taxes.
Ernie, do you know who Dave Walker is by chance? Joey just threw that out
there. I
heard
he just wrote a book.
He actually didn't write this book. This book was written by someone else, but he wrote a foreword in the book. David Walker was the Comptroller General for the United States. So basically, in simplified terms, he was the CPA for the United States. And he said in the front part of this book that taxes are going to have to double to keep our country from defaulting. And it was because of one four-letter word, and it was math. Because of all those debts and the outstanding debts we have, not only for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and everything that's continuing to grow, these liabilities we have, which are in like the 200 trillion level unfunded liabilities that are to come in our future, not to mention the over 20 trillion that we are as a country in debt. And I just remember sharing these sort of things with Joey. So you can imagine now, Joey's starting to think about all these things he's learning. Now he's looking over at this 401k he's had for the last, what, 8 years or so? How long had you been at that company?
Yeah, I guess it was about 8 or 9 years at the time. But I'm a pretty simple guy, and I didn't need a whole lot more convincing than that because I could see these things happening. This wasn't someone's opinion. It really made sense to me. And I didn't want to leave that up to guesswork, right? I don't want the money that was going to be there for my future, my retirement, to be left up to so many variables, right? Not to mention what it was invested in. I didn't understand the stock market. I didn't understand mutual funds. I didn't understand these things. So I didn't have any control. I didn't know what it was being invested in, and I didn't know what the taxes were going to be in the future.
Shouldn't you feel or have the ability to be free to do and act the way you want to with your money?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what eventually kind of woke me up.
I guess I watch a lot of history shows, and it made me think of East Berlin and West Berlin. We had communist Germany out there. You had these checkpoints in order to cross over. And my in-laws actually were stationed in Stuttgart, Germany after Vietnam. And they were telling me about, like, they actually crossed over and all the different things they had to do. To me, it makes me think of the 401k IRA. Well, if I want to use it, I've got to go through these different checkpoints. If I'm going to put a certain amount of money in there, there's limits and I have to check in. I have to do this. It can't, if I'm going to put it back into it, I have to make sure it has to go through all these different mechanisms to get it back in there, to make sure that the money's there. I started thinking about, like, what are we dealing with? To me, this seems more like a prison than it does an investment.
That is exactly right.
And one of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
You love that movie, right?
So good.
Oh, so good. But you remember the scene in there where you're talking about the prison and what basically prison does to someone? It trains them to be prisoners. He starts talking about the walls on the prison.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, at first you hate these walls. Before it's over, though, you grow to depend on them. And I feel like that's what's happening to the average person out there when it relates to 401ks and IRAs. They don't even know any different. They don't even realize that they're in a prison. They're the prisoner. They've been seeing the walls forever. So they assume that this is the little world. Or you're a big Jim Carrey fan.
That's right.
The movie Truman.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, he didn't realize that he was the character in the play. There was a bigger world out there, but he was just living in this little small thing. I think a lot of people don't realize that they're the Truman. In this IRA world. And I know the show is constantly challenging that status quo with Wally the Wall Street. But to me, prison is the greatest analogy I can give for what an IRA really feels like.
Well, not to mention, we've even talked about this in one of our previous episodes about opportunities finding cash and how you're blinded because you know you can't get your hands on that cash in those qualified plans. The best opportunity in the world for an investment could come right by your desk and you're going to miss it. And that is really what drove me, because most people would say, Joey, well, I mean, you had to pay a penalty to take money out of that IRA. Isn't that terrible? You had to pay tax on it. Well, yeah, absolutely I did. But you know what really drove me was, how many opportunities over the next, at this point, it was almost 30 years, would I be giving up? Is that 10% penalty worth paying now so that I don't miss out on those opportunities in the future.
Well, think about the opportunities that you've had. Just name a few, because once you started taking money out of there, which I think you need to share exactly how you did it, opportunities become abound. And we've just got through talking about some of those on the past episodes. But yeah, if you would speak to those.
I mean, I've been able to do private mortgages for people that paid 10% interest. I've been able to do auto loans that were well over 26% interest. I've been able to do some private lending within my own family. I've utilized it for various things that I would have not had access to otherwise. Even this week, I've had so many people just asking me, hey, do you have cash? Because I need to flip this house. Or, hey, I've got this app, this new business idea. I need some cash. Can you help with this? It's unbelievable how much it just attracts people.
But how did it start? What was the first step? Where did you go first? Because all those things you just talked about, which are great, they happen after the fact. You had to have one deal before it sets you into motion.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the first mortgage? Yeah. The first opportunity was I was sitting in a conference room. It was just like a regular sales meeting or something. I don't remember. I had somebody come to me and say, hey, Joey, you know, this guy reached out to me. Can't get qualified for a regular mortgage because his credit just hasn't been built up in this country. He's from another country, but he's got a great job. Everything really, you know, plays out. He's putting 20% down. It's a house in an area that I would personally move into and live it my personal self. And well, he said, would you like to go in with me on this? It was like $130,000 mortgage. So out my half was about $67,000 or $65,000, something like that. And I thought, well, that sounds like a good opportunity for somebody. And I was like, wait a minute, you know what? I do have cash. I could do this. I don't need every dollar that's in my policies right now. I could get this to work. And then he said, yeah, we're going to charge 10% interest. It's a 15-year mortgage. And I thought, this guy signed up for that? I mean, that's a great opportunity. So I took that first step. And guess what? Since then, realtors are reaching out. Hey, I've got a client. Could you do another private mortgage for me? I heard this. I heard people on Facebook are putting my name in there when they have hard money lending opportunities. And it's just become kind of a known thing.
But where did that money come from that was in the policy?
Well, I had several policies already built up, but I then started new policies with the IRA systematically. I didn't pull all of it out at one time. It was about $200,000 at the time, because I didn't want to get taxed all in one year and I didn't want to have the penalty all in one year. So I spread it out over about 3 or 4 years.
So Ernie, what he just described is that my wife, you know, Megan's a dentist. You've seen her before.
I know where this is.
Visited her a couple times.
Yeah. Here is a great tale. I mentioned to Nelson one time, I was asking about this because I don't know if I was trying to help Joey with this or I was helping somebody else and talking to them about taking money out of an IRA. And Nelson said, Russ, your wife's a dentist. If somebody came to her and had a tooth that really needed to come out, it was, you know, it was rotting, decaying, had all these different infection around it. And they sat down in her chair and she looked at the tooth and said, yes, this is bad. We need to get this out. And she starts pulling on it for 2 or 3 minutes, you know, inflicting a little pain. And then says, you know what? I'll tell you what, I don't want to do all this today. Why don't you come back tomorrow and we'll work on it for a little bit. And they come back the next day and she starts pulling on it, tugging on it, twisting on it for a couple minutes, inflicting some more pain. I tell you what, why don't you come back tomorrow? We'll finish this thing out. That's what Joey just described whenever he was systematically, because that's what I asked Nelson. I said, what should somebody do? You know, shouldn't they try to systematically take this money out? And he said, well, what would your wife tell them to do with the tooth? Would she pull it out slowly? Does taking it out slowly help? Does that ease the pain? Did it ease your pain, Joey?
No. See, I knew I was going to get busted for this. But in my case, it made sense at the time. Maybe I would do things differently, right? We all live and learn. But I think the key is for me, it was to take it out systematically. And then secondly, I didn't want some people would say, well, if I've taken money out of this before, I chose not to have taxes or the penalty withheld, right? I wanted to make sure I had the full amount of the cash to put in the policy. And then if I need to pay taxes and the penalty the following year, because that's when I was going to have to pay it, I could even borrow from the policy to pay those things. but I got more money to work for me faster by doing it the way that I did.
Well, there is ways. Again, we're not here to give you tax advice or even investment advice over a podcast. We're talking about an example that Joey experienced. But we have had clients have taken systematic withdrawals from their IRA and actually avoided the penalty. Some people don't even realize that you can take money from an IRA pre-59 and a half without having to pay the penalty. Now, there's some restrictions. There's a governor on there. There's limits and there's rules that you have to follow. But if you go out and just Google 72T, you can find out there's systematic periodic withdrawals based upon a certain, like one of three methods where you can get money out. And we've had clients that have done that and are doing that currently to avoid the penalties, because that was one of the things they wanted to avoid. But when I'm sitting here, I'm looking at the tax code and I see how many times it's changed in just the last 10 years alone. I start thinking to what David Walker says and how many times it's going to potentially change in the future to start collecting some of these back taxes, if you will. Hence the reason why we don't have any IRAs or 401ks anymore. We've gotten rid of ours.
You know, again, as Russ just mentioned, this is really not to tell people that they need to do this. This isn't for everybody. We're not about giving blanket financial advice like some other financial entertainers that exist out there. It's not a one size fits all type of deal. But if you have questions about this personally, I'm happy to share my personal story. I can never tell you to do this, but you can always give us a call. You can set a strategy call on our website or on the show notes. We'll have a link in there. 15-minute call. I actually had a few this morning and happy to answer questions about what my experience has been, so on and so forth. But for those of you who have questions about now why, I mean, I still like my qualified plan. I don't understand why this is a bad thing. I will also say one of the resources you shared with me, Russ, early on was from our good friends, Todd Lankford at Truth Concepts. They have a great video on what is really truly happening in a qualified plan and what the actual return is. Like, people think they're getting a discount or a benefit by even getting a match.
Well, especially most of the people listening to this podcast are business owners.
Right.
And they have employees and they're giving matches and they hear from their accountants, oh, you need to set up a 401k for your employees so that way you can put in this extra money. They call it safe harbor and all this other garbage, where you can actually put more money into this qualified plan for yourself if you will just match your employees. So really, they have this expense that they have to do in order to give their employees the money, just so that then they can put more money into prison for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And I'm thinking, like, they're like, because I get to match my own money. And I'm like, but you are the company. It's no match. It's your money. And when you look at these calculators, and I'm glad to do it with you as well, but we've got such a great resource in Todd. So we actually put up one of his videos that goes through it. You'll see very quickly that this match is not nearly what you think it is, especially if you're the business owner. You start really questioning, why would I put my money in communist Germany? I mean, a 401k. For this long period of time, especially when there's such limits to what I can do with it after the fact.
So it's been a while since this actually happened. It's been almost four years.
Yeah, 4 years.
I started this kind of down this road. And, you know, to be honest with you, it's tremendous feeling, like, to have that off of my back. Like, I don't have to wonder anymore. I don't have to worry about what the market's doing. I don't have to wonder how much taxes I'm going to have to pay. I don't have to wonder if I can take advantage of an opportunity.
So are you completely out of it now?
Yes. Yeah, it's gone.
And I mean, just, I know, looking back over the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, not only did you leave the career that you were in, you came to work with me. Then a couple of years ago, we started Wealth Without Wall Street. And that's been pretty cool, right? I mean, the opportunities just continue to flow in. I'm so excited to see you free of those shackles. You no longer look at those prison walls. You're past those, right? You're now, what's the guy's name? Ed, whatever. Who is the guy behind the scene in Truman?
I'm terrible.
Oh, the guy
Ed,
was...
What is it? It's not Ed Helms.
He's like the guy that was playing the director or whatever, yeah, of the whole deal. Yeah, I never remember.
His cool hat and his terrible glasses.
I'll think of his name in a second. You guys, Ed Harris, that's who it is.
There you go.
You're like Ed Harris now. You're sitting in the director's chair of this. You see what you didn't see before. And that's kind of cool, because we've talked about that the unseen, right? Like if you're looking at an iceberg in the ocean, you see about 10%, and 90% of it's underneath the water. It's the unseen. And in economics, we're talking about Paul Cleveland. It's really the unseen. In economics, a lot of people only see this short little part. They see the deduction that they're receiving initially, but the unseen is what took down the Titanic.
No doubt.
Let that sink in.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's about not being subject to those concerns that most people are going to have to deal with in retirement and being able to invest in things that I do know and that I do understand. So I'm really grateful.
What are some other benefits that you've seen, though, since you cashed that out?
I have more insurance coverage than I ever would have had otherwise. So my family is that much more secure. I would have never bought that if I had just left it in the IRA.
I don't want to get too personal, but you've had a little bit of health change lately too, right?
I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't mind sharing, but I have ulcerative colitis. And when you talk about having insurance companies look at you with certain medical conditions, you become less and less insurable. And so having that in place has really taken.
And that's been diagnosed in the last 4 years, though.
That's right. That's right.
So the insurance that you put in place due to cashing out that IRA and started funding these insurance policies was prior to that.
That's right.
Which you wouldn't have the same amount of coverage is definitely at the same rates that you have today because of the way we did it.
That's right.
And those are things that you can't ever, and I always think about that. I mean, my dad was diagnosed as onset diabetes in his mid-30s. And, you know, you think about, well, I don't need insurance. I don't need insurance till, you know, later in life, you know, and you wait and you don't know all these things that's going to happen. You know how many times my dad's asked me, hey, you think I can get some insurance? I'm like, I'm sorry. It's not even an option.
That ship has passed.
Yeah. And when you really want it, it's like when you're sitting down at the bank, when you really want money from them, it's the time they say, sorry. So if you want to avoid those sort of circumstances and take your advice, Joey, I encourage people to jump on and schedule a time with you to talk about that. And I hope through that, you will avoid the restrictions and penalties and other things that we've just disclosed today. So anyway, thank you so much for listening as always, and look forward to next time we're with you. Joey, I'm a game player. You know that. Now, not a video game player.
I wouldn't call you a gamer. Maybe a game player.
Yeah.
Yeah, you love to play
games. Not video games, but I love games, whether it's board games, athletic games.
Well, you're competitive, too.
A tad.
Like, super competitive.
just a tad. That's the reason I worked out with ladies, just so I could still be competitive, right? I can compete with guys. I can compete with our ladies. Some of them, not all of them. But what game is it that everybody is playing that they're losing? And it's got to be this one.
Right. You're not going to win the game against the government.
No. And then what game are most people playing? It's playing kick the tax can down the road. I'm not going to pay my taxes today because that's going to be bad. I'm going to wait till later when they're worse.
It's my benefit to pay taxes later. We'll see. We'll see about that.
That's silliness. By the way, in this podcast, I was just sitting there listening to it. I mentioned one of our clients who had been trying to actually take money from an IRA and invest it in this alternative investment, which we're actually going to be talking about in our upcoming episode.
Stay tuned.
But just kind of an update. She had been waiting for 3 weeks back and forth with this company trying to get them to understand what she's putting her money in. Yes, it's not the traditional things, but it is an investment. And they were like, no, you got to have this rule.
This is a self-directed IRA.
Yeah, she's actually in an area where she can direct it, and they're still limiting her access to it. She finally got to a point, says, I'm tired of running my head against a wall. I'm just going to just let it sit there. I'll do something else with that money. And she's taking a loan against her insurance policy and buying it.
Isn't that crazy?
It's just so frustrating that whenever we see these restrictions, I think we gave the analogy of being in a prison. It is so freeing. And I just love your story of how now you don't have that anymore.
That's right. In fact, just yesterday I had somebody, new client that we were meeting. He said, I know you call this company Wealth Without Wall Street, but surely you don't have you don't have nothing in the market, right? You have must have an IRA or something. I said, stay tuned on that. That's in our next podcast. But no, Russ nor I, either one of us, have anything in the stock market. We don't believe in the volatility and all the other things we mentioned.
Well, we believe in passive activities, right? The first thing we should be doing is investing in ourselves. The second thing we should be doing is investing in our business. And the third thing, once we've got those taken care of, then we start looking for passive activities. And next week, we're going to get into a very passive activity. Now, is the underlying investment, what it's doing, is it potentially volatile? Absolutely. Now, we did an interview with the owner of this company that unfortunately, again, my volume was off and we couldn't hold it. So we had to do a recap. Here, listen in just a piece of what you're going to get to hear next week, crypto mining. Putting money into something like cryptocurrency, which, be perfectly honest, I'm not a fan of cryptocurrency as
right, directly.
Investment.
Right.
Just for the record, I've not gone out and bought any Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero,
Ripple, whatever.
There's so many different options. I've not done that and don't plan to do that. But when we were presented with the idea of actually having machines that will produce cash, because that's really what they do.
Well, we immediately start thinking passive income.
It just made sense. It's like, okay, this is like a little mini rental house.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.